Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today I have an amazing guest. His name is Jake Morfonios, and he is the top Las Vegas researcher right now. There's a lot of really good ones, so I don't want to say that there aren't, but he's the top as far as people watching his stuff. He just recently had more viewers than all the mainstream media combined. He was third on Google when they Googled the Las Vegas shooting. And after that happened, YouTube took his stuff down and did a strike against his account. Wall Street Journal covered him. The USA Today covered him. And they talked about what happened with YouTube doing a strike and taking him down. And so then there was this backlash against YouTube. And so they put that back up. But then after that, they started taking his and demonetizing his videos. They did not like the fact that he was more popular than all the mainstream media combined, and that Americans were getting information from him and others in the alternative media on the Las Vegas shooting. So I wanted to have him onto the show, you know, with our business game changers, people who are doing disruption, big issues, innovation. He definitely qualifies. I think you're going to be very impressed with what he's doing on this front. And I really hope YouTube looks at this information and realizes how important it is for this kind of information to stay up for people to learn about the truth and what's going on. And if there is another reason that makes it legitimate for him not to be sharing this information, you know, national security of some reason that's legitimate, then you should be speaking and should be honest and truthful. But he's had a lot of attacks on his family, threats. He's had his car tires slashed. He's had a lot of interesting things happen to him. So we're going to get into all of that. First, he's going to talk about his background. We're going to get into the latest Las Vegas happenings. He really gets into explaining what it is up to date. And then we talk about YouTube in general and how they are, what they're doing and what that means to us as a society. So I hope you listen to this whole thing and share it if you can. Share it wide and far. I think this is one of the more important videos. I do a lot of important, I have amazing people on my show. But right now in history, I think this is one of the more important things that we have going on as far as freedom of speech and getting to the core of what our rights are and why it's so important to have freedom of speech. I think this is exactly why we need freedom of speech. And we talk about all that. And so I hope you stay tuned for that and listen to that part of the show. So let's get into my interview now with Jake Morfonios. Hi, Jake. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sarah. So nice to meet you.
I'm really glad you decided to join us because I have been told by a number of my listeners that you are the person I need to talk to for Las Vegas. You've been on the ground doing reporting there and phenomenal reporting, trying to get to the truth. But before we do this, especially for the people who don't know you, I know you have a huge following, but you know, there's going to be people listening who haven't heard of you before. I really want to talk about your background. You have immense background, an investigative background before you got into this type of reporting. Can you explain what you did?
Sure. So I come from a political background in general. My grandparents were very political. My grandfather was a Pulitzer-nominated investigative reporter down in Miami, going after corruption, mafia, things like that. And then he used his connections and got in as a political operative and did that for years. He was Democrat. He married my grandmother, who was Republican. She has hosted Rush Limbaugh's show in the past, and so they have very different viewpoints there. But she was an elected official. My dad was an elected official for a little while down in Miami. So I grew up in a very political atmosphere, always participating on political campaigns. So in my early 20s, my goal in life was to become a political operative, to work as a strategist. And it was going well for a while. I was the North Carolina state campaign manager for Steve Forbes when he ran for president back in 2000. I was a writer for the Ron Paul campaigns of 08 and 12. And I've managed plenty of campaigns for like state level candidates, and I was enjoying it. But As time went on, I just decided there's too much dirt, too much that I would have to compromise with my own ethics to be the kind of successful operative that you have to be in. And so I got out of it. And I segued into doing investigative work. I worked in a number of different fields as an investigator, from abuse cases, neglect cases, to I worked for a Fortune 100 bank for a number of years as a financial crimes investigator. So I've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people, both victims and criminals. You use forensic profiling. You take somebody that's lying, recognize the signs that they're lying, use your own techniques to turn them around, get them to tell the truth. So a whole lot like that. And then everything kind of shifted gradually after 9/11. And my worldview started to change as I started conducting investigations related to that. But
Well,
up until that point, I was not what you would call awake. I had a very, popular worldview, saw things like most people do, was not awake yet to secret intelligence activity and all of the dirty stuff that goes on.
now 9/11 was an awakening for you. I think it was an awakening for a lot of people that the world, what the heck? So what happened with that? That's a very interesting story, how you got involved with this through the 9/11 scenario, because you were doing great work and kind of woke up through that process.
Well, what happened was I heard I was at work. I was at the time on the morning of 9/11. I was working as the assistant director of a basically the largest nonprofit hunger relief agency in the state. And I was interviewing clients. It was early in the morning. A client came in and said, "Have you heard what's happening in New York?" And I didn't have a television, so I turned on the radio and I listened as everything played out. And there was something about hearing it and my vivid imagination trying to picture what was happening. I could hear the people screaming. You could hear some of the women shouting, they're jumping," talking about people jumping out of the building. I mean, it was psychologically traumatizing. And then to hear the roar of the buildings as they came down, broadcast over the radio, it was the death knell of thousands of people. And it filled me with this indignation. And I knew I had to do something to try and contribute in some way. And so 2 days later, I formed a research group. This is back before there were things like 4chan and Vode and these different message boards. So I formed a research group and I gathered people together. And we became the largest 9/11 research group at that time on the internet. And our goal was to find out who Al-Qaeda was. We were going to go after Osama bin Laden. We were going to collect as much intelligence as we could to turn over to the FBI and the other agencies in the federal government to try and assist as citizens. The problem was, I'm someone who I only care about the truth. I don't care about being right. I may have a pet theory that I like, but if someone presents me with evidence or if my research finds that, oops, that's actually not right, I don't hold to it. I adapt to whatever the new information is. I would rather follow the truth than be, double down on something that's not correct. So as time went on, I came to find that there were some really big holes in that official narrative. And one of the big things early on was that long before Al-Qaeda took credit for 9/11 or anything like that, there was a different intelligence group or a different terrorist group that was taking credit for everything. And they called themselves SAJ or Secret Army for Justice. These people said that they were part of what's called Cell 15. These were allegedly terrorists that were the head of it was Mohammed Atta, the alleged ringleader of the hijackers. And these people are the ones who took credit for the anthrax attacks, the big anthrax scare that happened immediately after 9/11. Well, my research group had been infiltrated by these people, and they were posting stuff, and gradually it went from my group out into the larger intelligence networks around the world. The MI6 and others were starting to talk about this group. But as I got looking into it, I found these aren't the terrorists, this is Mossad. And that was the first I never knew anything about Mossad prior to that, but it was the Mossad working in conjunction with the CIA, and it opened my eyes. They put me on a terrorist watch list
Oh,
because I
geez.
started talking about this, and My goodness, I'm here trying to defend my government, my country, my people, and yet they're attacking me. And I couldn't figure it out. It's just truth. Who's afraid of the truth?
Exactly. That's what you think, right?
And then I started to realize, wait a second, there are elements operating outside of the rule of law. They are extra constitutional. They are not beholden to the U.S. Congress. They are not beholden to the U.S. president. They are doing things on behalf of multinational corporations, international bankers. This is a syndicate, a cabal of very evil people that uses the CIA predominantly to do these terrible things around the world. And that's what launched me into the next, decade and a half of investigation into clandestine CIA activities and intelligence operations around the world.
That's really an amazing story. And that's when they started weaponizing the word truther, which now has absolutely no power anymore because everybody eventually said it worked at first. It was kind of interesting. But now everybody's like, there's nothing wrong with being a truther. That's what everybody should
It's
be.
a badge of pride at this point.
Yeah, we've all.
Initially, everyone, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. Please don't lump me in with those people who think 9/11 was an inside job. But now people are just like, can't fool me.
Oh,
I know this
it,
was that there were
BS.
elements in it. Right. That's
BS, we
been
all want
great
to
to see
be,
wake
yeah,
up.
ex we all want to be truthers. Now that woke me up too. Now I didn't wake up until to things were just kind of weird until I started watching 9/11, people like you and people putting documentaries out, and I kind of got obsessed. You get obsessed when you just, oh wow, this is so bizarre. And so I got obsessed watching this, and Building 7 is a I think is the smoking gun, as far as I'm concerned.
Very
It's
much.
what it's across a highway, two-lane highway, and everything else. It's not even by the other buildings. It's anybody with an open mind that looks at that. I don't know how you can come to any other conclusion on the fact that what there's now. I don't know what happened, but their story definitely isn't right.
That was controlled demolition without any question whatsoever. None whatsoever. Richard Gage, the head of architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, I didn't know this until just this last week, but I had learned a lot from him and had done some videos based on research that their group had done. But Richard Gage apparently had watches my stuff as well and had recommended me to. There's a Russian team, REN TV, came to my home to do a documentary this week on CIA operations, and he had recommended me. So we're loyal to each other. We may not always agree with one another's theories or anything, but still, in general, we care about our country, we care about our fellow Americans, and we recognize that there are elements operating in the country that are not loyal to us.
Yeah, and
They are the enemies.
it's too bad. It shouldn't take Russian television to get to the truth. I mean, honestly, it should be coming from us because we should be caring about us. But let's get to another important aspect of you and your work. One thing that may question that I wanted to question is the title of your channel because it's End Times Report. And as you know, End Times has a lot of connotations.
It
Why
does.
did you name it End Times Report?
Right. So clearly, the name of the channel makes me sound like a wacko Christian conspiracy theorist nutcase that's, end of the world. I understand. Partly, the name of the channel is meant to be provocative. I am a Christian. I am, deeply, full of faith. But what it is I was a history major in college. I love history. And one of my specialties in investigative work is researching geopolitics of the Middle East, what's going on in Syria, Israel, everything going on around there. Well, you don't have to be a Bible believer to look at things from the Bible, such as the book of Revelation or in the Old Testament, the book of Daniel, and see that there are patterns there. The study of these prophecies is called eschatology. Well, there are factions who use this as an excuse, saying, for example, we have a right to this land because the Bible says so. and they justify some of their political activities based on things in the Bible. So it behooves someone who wants to investigate and understand what's going on in the geopolitical arena to look at that. So I look at biblical prophecies, and it's very detailed. For example, in the Bible, it talks about a great war in the end times, or the last dispensation, when there are massive armies arrayed on either side of the Euphrates River. Well, it just so happens that right now we have got the CIA backing the Kurds, U.S. military in Syria, who are up on the north side of the Euphrates, and on the other side of the river, you have Russia and the Syrian Arab Army, as well as all of Iranian Hezbollah fighters, Lebanese sponsored by Iran, on the other side. The U.S.-backed forces have control of the Syrian oil fields. Syria's not going to let those go. It'll kill their, just decimate their economy. Because down in the south, their other oil fields are in the Golan Heights, which are under the control of Israel. So they're having their nation stripped into pieces by competing factions. So when you look at the Bible and these prophecies, you don't have to believe them necessarily from even a religious perspective. You can be an atheist and look and see, aha, this is almost like a playbook. They are doing things based on what's being predicted. It is stunning the number of geopolitical events that are happening, that are unfolding, that match right up to these things. And that's because they use this. Those who are predominantly not even believers that are using these things as pretext and justification for their actions. So, End Times News Report, the end times to me signifies this period of time in which these kinds of prophecies are fulfilled. Whether you want to ascribe it to some kind of supernatural God, whatever, or you're just someone who says, I see how they're taking advantage of these ancient prophecies as justification to do these terrible things that they, to go grab oil here or conquer this nation. It's all spelled out. So that's why I came up with the name, because I love the study of eschatology and how it is plays such a big role in today's geopolitics.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting because I haven't really looked at it to that degree. I've looked at it at a higher level, but not in the detail. And I think that is really interesting for people to know. Of course, I don't think the world's coming to an end from that perspective. That's not my belief, but I can see how it can really scare people. And, bringing some calmness to it would be helpful.
My own,
Which isn't
my own.
happening right now with things like Las Vegas going on.
Right. I was just going to add, my own perspective is, and this varies from, I guess, much of the Christian community, in that I believe that there have been various epochs in mankind's history where there have been great, whether it's natural catastrophes or otherwise, when the population of the earth has been radically reduced. You look at the pyramids in Egypt and some of these other monoliths around the world, clearly signifying that there have been advanced civilizations in the earth's history. And so those period of times before the collapse of the civilization would be a kind of end time. Didn't wipe out the human race, but it brought it down to where there was a small remnant of people that had to build back up. And that's my interpretation of where we're at now, that we are on the potential cusp of, with the number of nuclear weapons, the friction between us and North Korea, Russia, China, all of this, could this be a period of time in the coming decades as it unfolds when there will be some natural or man-made catastrophe that could reduce the world's population? I don't know.
And you don't have to be a Christian or a fanatic to see that because, I've interviewed a lot of people who are scientists, who are atheists, who are all over the board that are worried about that. So it's not a, it's just, it is what it is. And you are right. The science is showing that there was probably a pattern of our civilization building and then reducing and building and then reducing. And the facts are coming out. That is phenomenal. Those are fun. I have a real big interest in that, the archaeology and what that's pointing to. But let's get into some other things that are a little bit more difficult that you've been into that before we get into Las Vegas stuff, which I know a lot of people are interested as well, but your family and you have been threatened on numerous occasions, and it looks like you're always trying to do good things for our country and just trying to get to the truth, and you're very humble in the way that you present it. You don't have this arrogant attitude and things. Can you share with us some of the experiences that you've had and what your family has endured?
Sarah, one of the topics that I explore a lot is it's difficult to even talk about, but the international child sex trafficking trade, pedophilia networks, satanic ritual abuse, just horrible things that are so dark. They don't talk about it in mainstream news reports. It's hard to take these kinds of topics and talk about it without offending, viewers. It's the nature of it you can't talk about very easily. But it's something that is very important to me, is trying to expose these international sex trafficking rings. So there is an operation that's going on out of Hollywood, North Hollywood, that I have been working on for about a year and a half, exposing some of the people. As a result of this, at least in conjunction with some of the work that law enforcement has done, we had back in February, something like 400 people associated with a massive pedophile ring out there in Hollywood were busted.
And
So
you
we
had a
are
big part of that.
the I take what I do is I conduct my research. I gather the facts. Of course, I have no law enforcement authority, so when I have enough that I think it can hold up in court, I take that to I have a contact in the FBI who runs the child trafficking operations, not operations, but the investigations for the FBI. And if it's something they can use, they use it. I have testified in court before as a as a an expert witness in trials trying to take some of these people down. The problem, of course, is that this being the most lucrative industry in the world, it outstrips the drug trade as the most lucrative. Human trafficking makes more money than heroin in the world, and that's saying something.
And is it human trafficking of children for all the nefarious activities that is the most lucrative?
Yes, it's also the hardest to track. You've got three primary purposes for the human trafficking. There's labor, forced labor. The traditional kind of slavery, take someone, force them to work. There is the sex slave trade, and that's especially harsh with women, especially young women. And then you have a subset of that, which is the trafficking of children, and sometimes specifically for the purpose of ritual abuse of children. And then you have organ harvesting is another thing they do that's quite lucrative. So the group that I've been investigating in Hollywood, they are predominantly they take young women, they advertise right on Facebook and elsewhere.
When you're saying young women, how young?
Well, these girls are mostly young teens, tweens, 13, 14, 15, what they do is they mostly take advantage of girls who are having their runaways, or they are just having trouble. These are foster children, girls who are very susceptible. They offer them these incredible opportunities. We are going to make you a star. You are going to have the best clothes. We're going to send you around Europe. All you have to do is model jewelry for some companies. You go around to these shows and you wear their jewelry and whatever, all expense paid. You're going to go from this country, this country. They put up pictures of these, gorgeous destinations, very exotic. All you have to do is come and apply. But what happens is when these girls respond to it, they take the girls out of the country. They say, "We'll take you on your first trip." They take them out of the country, and quite often what they do is they dope them up with heroin. They get them addicted. They take them into a country where predominantly Eastern Europe, Slovenia, places like that. They get them addicted to heroin. The girls can't speak the foreign language. They're stuck, and they just pimp them out over and over and over until they are used up. So
And then
it's
what?
a
And
horrible thing.
then they kill them or whatever. They don't care, just whatever.
Either the girls die from drug overdose or they're murdered by, I mean, they use these girls for some horrible things. It's not like, and I don't want to diminish the sex trade in the United States, but a prostitute on the street and young girl on the street in America, it's, I don't want to say it's bread and butter, but compared to what they do, when you're a businessman or someone who's wealthy, you can go and pay an enormous amount of money and do whatever you want. And they carry out the most sickening fantasies with these kids, because they're unaccountable. There's no way to catch them.
And their children. I mean, a lot
And
of
their
the
children.
they're children. Yeah. Okay.
So as a result of my exploration of that, and naming names, I catch some flack for that. There's some consequences to that, and among which has been, I've had my systems here, my computers hacked, images, picture. I don't put anything about my children out publicly, but they have taken images off my hard drive, doctored them, put them back out on a public website with a threat that my children's throats will be slit if I don't stop. We've had tires on my vehicles have been slashed numerous times. They've actually gone in and cut hoses and cords under our hood. So I've had the sheriff's department out investigating a number of times, but it can be frightening.
Oh, I can imagine. So, okay. You have many contacts in the FBI and in law enforcement, and you kind of already talked about that a little bit, but they support your work in general, these contacts that you have. And I know there's factions of the FBI or the CIA that do not support you at all, but you also have many that support you and actively support you. Can you talk about that a little? I know names are not what
Right.
we are looking for, but can you export it, explain it at a high level?
Sure. So you've got the CIA, which is almost completely corrupt, but then you've got the FBI. And within the FBI, there are different ideologies. Some people, a lot of the people in the FBI just came from police departments, sheriff's departments. They're just people doing, they enjoy law enforcement. And then they apply, they get a job in the FBI. They care about America. They care about things like Second Amendment rights and, just typical, the kind of, rosy picture of what you would think about the FBI. However, there are elements in the FBI that are essentially guns for hire. They will do whatever they provide services because of their contacts, because of what they have access to, and they do some pretty dirty things. And because of that, you have kind of a civil war going on inside of the FBI. You've got warring between the various intelligence communities. CIA hates the NSA, CIA hates the FBI. They don't get along. It's always jockeying for who can have the most power given to them from the government. They constantly try to undermine each other. But even within the agencies themselves, there are factions within those agencies, and we saw this play out in October of 2016, just before the presidential election, when essentially what happened was some of the patriots in the FBI said, James Comey, who was the FBI director, you know darn well that there is a load of information here implicating Hillary Clinton as being a pay-for-play crook. She's offering her services out to the highest bidders, so the Saudis and others through the Clinton Foundation, and you're sitting on this. So either you are going to go, and do something about this, reopen the investigation, or we are going to leak it. And as a result of that, Comey went out, he briefly reopened the investigation to comply with that kind of letter of the law. He even ended up closing it. But that was the result of these competing factions inside the FBI. So some of these people who, for bureaucratic reasons, cannot, they see what's happening, they know that it's wrong, but they can't do anything about it. For example, the mess that has happened out in Bunkerville, Nevada, FBI has been especially critical, harsh on the Bundy family and people associated with them. But there are also some in the FBI who do empathize. And so you have leaks and things happening. Well, some of the people, knowing that I'm not beholden to anyone, I do my own thing, I don't work for any major network, I'm not worried about losing my job. So they bring it to me. I keep the information, the source, completely confidential. I package it in a way that I think the viewers will understand, and I put it out. So that's why I have people that contact me. When I was out in Las Vegas this last week, I had a number of police speak with me. And maybe we can talk about that in a minute. But what the people on kind of the lower tier of the Las Vegas Metro PD, they have a very different opinion about what's going on and what should be going on than what the bureaucrats at the top
I'm sure.
are doing and saying.
Well, and that's what I want to get into now is what, because you spent an extensive amount of time there trying to really figure out what's going on. And your Las Vegas video were demonetized and scary for YouTube. And I want you to talk about what you learned when you were on the ground. And then also at the end, I want you to talk about what YouTube did and why they possibly took them down. I'm very disappointed in YouTube because it's, someone like you being shut down is absolutely ridiculous, and it's hurting our country. So if they really care about our country, they wouldn't be doing things like that. So can you talk about what you learned in Las Vegas, and then we'll get into some of the YouTube stuff.
Sure. So I of course, just like everyone else, when the Las Vegas shooting happened, I immediately had my own opinions, my own ideas. But again, I want the truth. So I will listen to the different theories, but I want to debunk those that are, groundless, because a lot of these crazy theories that come out, it's actually coming from the very parties that are committing the atrocities. They put out disinformation to discredit the truther community. And they put out these crazy ideas that have no substance and that are easily, you can debunk them, and it makes us all look dumb by association. So what I wanted to do was to go out to Las Vegas, talk with contacts, and find out for myself as best I could what the truth was. So when I got out there, the first thing that I did was I started speaking with some of the police officers. When you've got the Mandalay Bay Hotel, then you've got the concert venue, and this is several acres around here, and they've got it all cordoned off with police tape. And at every possible entry point to this crime scene area, you've got police stationed there. So I went and interviewed some of them. Off the record, I didn't say I was a reporter. It was mostly conversational, just talking. And as they warmed up, and I started asking questions. The general sense that they conveyed to me separately, independent of each other, is that they are not satisfied that the real investigative work that should be done has been squelched from the top down. They say that at this point, the Las Vegas PD is essentially not involved in the investigation at all. This is completely an FBI operation, and there were swarms of FBI when I was there. You could see them all over the place. They've got over 200 agents in Vegas right now. And they are running with this story that there was a single gunman, and it sounds good. That's what they release in their press conferences. But the fact is, these police say what they told me is that the general consensus, when they talk privately, off the record, is that they know there was more than one shooter. But that's not something they can talk about publicly. There were different theories that they gave as to why, some leads that they knew were being followed. For example, one of the police officers said they assumed that the reason for some of the phone calls down at some of the other hotels saying, "Hey, we've got a shooter here," the idea was to get the police, first of all, to scatter away from the Mandalay Bay, allowing more to happen there. But also, one of the police officers said they think that what was planned was there was going to be shooting of the police at these various locations. But there were a number of things that didn't go right with the operation, and these things didn't happen. Well, some of the police were shot. We're still waiting on details. They haven't released yet to us how that happened exactly.
Well, they're trying to figure out how can they can say there is only one shooter, but yet police were shot all over the place.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Now, I'll say this as well. So the first thing that I learned in Las Vegas is that there is, in fact, between the police and just the civilians, I talked to dozens of people out of those dozens, only one person out of everyone said that they believe in the single shooter theory. Everybody knows, because the locals, they hear all of these employees at the different hotels. They talk to their family and friends locally. The locals don't believe this one shooter theory. Not many of them.
Well, because they heard it. They experienced it.
Yeah, they were there. And we've got a number of people that have come forward, a lot of eyewitnesses, and more came out today talking about shooting at the Bellagio. At first, it was a woman named, I think it was Renee Downs, who put out a video where she's walking around the Bellagio while it was on lockdown. And this is half an hour after the shooting stopped at the Mandalay Bay. So this is well after the gunman at the Mandalay Bay is dead. There are gunshots down at the Bellagio, and the people scatter. Either bullets hit the front door of the glass, or people in their stampede busted through the glass. Either way, some of the glass was broken out. But in this video, she shows you, she walks around showing how it's on lockdown. She actually talks with one of the Bellagio security guards saying, you know what, I've called the sheriff and sheriff's department, and I've also called the media multiple times to tell them that there is something going on here at the Bellagio, but they're just saying publicly that it's not. Well, people said at first in response to that, oh, it's just that one person. We don't see the broken glass. It can't be true. But today, more people who were there, another couple, have come out saying that, no, we were there and this was happening. Now, Sarah, I'll tell you this, and this is something I can't give too many details about. I went to Las Vegas with an open mind. I suspected in advance there had to be more than one shooter, very likely an intelligence operation. But I was willing to accept that if the facts demonstrated it was Stephen Paddock alone, fine. But I was shown there are people who have cell phone footage who are terrified. They're not wanting to release it publicly because of what it shows. And I saw some of these videos. And this, like, I feel nervous sitting here even saying it. I saw cell phone footage that was recorded of shooting happening in places that they are not talking about. And I saw bodies on the ground that are not over at the concert venue. So I saw it with my own eyes. And I can understand the concern why they don't want to release this. Some of the people that were shot that have been interviewed, such as a man named Rocky Palermo from California. He took a bullet to the side. CNN did an interview with him, and they show the bullet to, you know, make sure the public can see this is a real gunshot wound. He's a hunter. He's familiar with firearms. Well, what they did not include in their interview, he decided, well, if they're not going to cover it, I'm just going to say it in a separate interview. He did another interview, and he says, I'm certain there were 3 to 5 gunmen on the ground inside the concert venue. And he said that he had talked in the hospital with multiple people who had also been shot who said the same thing. And as they were leaving, they were all interviewed by the FBI. And then on their release, they were interviewed again by the FBI. Rocky says that what he's aware of the other saying is they all told the FBI, no, you've got this wrong. There were multiple shooters and we know it. They're being silenced. Videos are being pulled down off of YouTube and Facebook and elsewhere, as people have been requested to turn in their cell phones so the FBI can look at the footage. Well, what's happening with a lot of them are some of these cell phones are being returned to the people with the footage completely wiped. They're deleting the originals off the people's phones. So they're covering it up. They don't want the public to know. And this gets into the speculation of why. And that's where the core of the investigation is right now, is we've established, at least those that are willing to look at the evidence, that there were multiple shooters, that this operation was something much bigger than what the media is being told. But why? We're looking at a number of possibilities. One of those possibilities being that this was something related in some way to Operation Fast and Furious type gun running program that went bad, and now they're trying to cover it up to avoid another scandal. So there's a couple different things. I interviewed one man who had been, there was a truck close to the Mandalay Bay on the day of the shooting, hours before the shooting. This truck had a lot of bags in it, and there are homeless people all over in Las Vegas, especially around the strip, panhandlers. And well, one homeless man had been there, and they saw this guy who he described as a mercenary and said he looked like a mercenary. I guess he's wearing black and, military looking. Well, this guy was taking these bags, walking off. Well, while he had walked off, this homeless man ran up, grabbed a couple of the bags, and took off with them, not even knowing what was in the bags. Well, he got there, looked in the bags, and they were full of guns. And so he decided to start trying to sell these guns for money to people, tourists there that kind of fit the image of someone who might want a gun. So one of the potential gun buyers spoke to me and told me about all this, and described the type and caliber guns. And these are the same weapons that were discovered, the same type of weapons that were found up in the room 135 on the 32nd floor. There's like five shooter. I'm sorry, five round pistol called a Judge. This is what you see if anyone has seen the photo, the crime scene photo of Stephen Paddock after it's kind of a bloody scene. Well, there's a gun right above his head, laying on the floor. Well, that is the gun that is the exact gun, exact model that this homeless man was trying to sell to the man. So I've got the plates. We're running it, trying to see what we can find. But there was some kind of operation going on, much, much bigger than what they're telling us, that's for sure.
And there could be some kind of CIA operation that just went bad, or FBI operation, and they're trying from a national security standpoint, but they've lied to us so much in the past, and we know there's nefarious activities going on worldwide that it's really hard. I mean, they have to come clean on some of this stuff for us to believe them, just for us to know that our country's going in the right direction.
Yeah, if you can't have faith that your own FBI and, well, I don't know if anyone has faith in the CIA, anyone who's familiar with what the CIA does, but yeah, it weakens your faith in your own system of government. Plus the fact that these agencies largely operate without any kind of congressional oversight. They operate with impunity. They can get away with committing crimes. They're running drugs. They're doing things that are the CIA. Is the largest human trafficker in the world.
That's just,
It's
it's
stunning what they
infuriating.
do.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
infuriating. And the people who are whistleblowers are being attacked. And so it's important that we protect people like you and hopefully like me who are trying to make a difference. And you're doing much more than I am, being on the ground and really getting to the truth. You're doing amazing work. And I think it's important you're an American hero, and I think history will prove that out. You know, when we look back at what's going on right now, this is not going to be looked good in history. All this stuff comes out in history. People start, you know, there's too much public stuff now. We
Yeah.
document things too much. So people like you are going to be American heroes. And I think we need to acknowledge that and start taking care of people who are trying to get the truth out.
Yeah, we're trying, and what makes this possible is I certainly do my investigative work, but a lot of my work, where I get to the really good stuff, it's because people send tips to me. They trust that I will make use of it. They understand that I've got a large enough platform that I can reach a large number of people. And so they feed information to me. And a lot of it is theory and opinion and things that really don't pan out. But there are embedded in all of these messages that I get some excellent, excellent leads that take us in the right direction. And so the American people, in general, we care. The average American cares about the country. We love our country. We may not be super proud of our government and
Well,
what
it's like
it's
your
doing.
family. I mean, how can you
Yeah.
not? We have to take, I mean, this is what we are. This is all we got. We have to take care of it.
Yeah. People love their country. They love their neighbor. They're doing the best they can in the ways that they can. Not as many people have this kind of time. I've made this my full-time work, so I've got time to do this, but the average person doesn't have time. to devote this much effort to research. So they'll send me stuff. Gave me some good tips. I went up to Roanoke, Virginia, to track down information on Stephen Paddock's former plane, because one of the theories out there is that Stephen Paddock might have been a Barry Seal type person who Barry Seal from the Iran-Contra days was running drugs, back and forth from Central America to MENA, Arkansas, and so there's some speculation that perhaps I'm sorry, Stephen Paddock was using his Cessna. He certainly has a lot of safe houses that we have found, and from interviews with neighbors who have been in these, checked on these houses for him, they say that they're sparse. There's nothing in them. He doesn't use them to live in. He just has houses. What do you use these houses for? So anyway, it's speculation that he may have been helping to run guns. Led me to Roanoke to check it out, and there was a theory that his plane had been sold to a defense contractor. Didn't pan out. Turns out that's not the case, and we were able to set that aside.
Well,
So
how many people do you think actually died since you were there? Is the 500 or 600 people injured and 57, 59, I don't remember the exact number, is that a true, accurate number, or is it all BS?
the majority of the injuries were minor, fairly minor, and they were, it's not from gunshots. The majority of the people that were injured, it was from trampling. You can see, and I'll be putting out a video probably tomorrow showing, I went and got some photographs where you can see these chain link fences where originally the prior days of this concert, there were multiple exits where people could go in and out. For some reason that no one has been able to explain yet, on the night of the shooting, those exits were closed off and there was only one available exit. So when the shooting happened, people went to these exits because expecting they could get out, but they couldn't. So they ended up pushing and trampling one another, and a lot of people were pushed up against you can see where the chain link fences have been knocked
That's
over.
so, it's always interesting because there's always stuff like that happens at before these big operations or big disasters. There's things like suddenly there's no exits and there used to be all these exits.
So there were a lot of injuries. As far as I've got some associates who were going to be going yesterday to try and visit some of the hospitals. The majority of people have been released. They were in and out fairly quickly for minor wounds. There are a handful of people there that are still in critical condition who may or may not make it, who were shot. As far as the number of people that were killed, it's so hard to establish without seeing the records. We're going to try and see if we can talk to the coroner, but
It does it look
he's I'm
like
sure
it's
he's
does it look like it's pointing in the direction of the numbers they were talking about? And how'd they come to those numbers so quickly?
There's no way they could have known that early on. I watched it live. I'm kind of an insomniac, so I was up during the night here on the East Coast as the news first started coming out, and the numbers went from 10 shot to 20 shot to 50 shot, and the number of injured. Like, there's just no way they could have known that quickly. And it's also not possible that the sheriff, just before, while things were still going on, he came out with FBI chief, Las Vegas chief, right there at his side, came out and immediately said there's one shooter and no others. Any reports otherwise are false. Early on, you just can't know that. Here they are. We are That happened on the 1st. We're now on the 15th, and they are still revising their timeline of the most basic things over and over. And yet, immediately he said, "No other gunman, we know this." That's just not true. There's no way you could know such a thing that early on. But that's the FBI telling him what to say.
So how much more information do you, I mean, there's a lot more information out there, and we don't really have a clear picture yet, do we?
No, it's still, there's a lot of it is fuzzy, but it is starting to come together. It's coming together because citizen journalists are willing to go ask the questions. I was at the The press conference, the Las Vegas Metro PD press conference on Friday. Prior to Friday, it was open. You didn't have to be a one of the mainstream media journalists to get into the press conference. The problem was, the journalists like us who don't have to worry about our jobs were asking questions that were screwing up the official story.
They were
Each
good
week they're,
questions. I mean, you were
yes,
doing
they're.
your investigative journalism, and those are the people they. Okay, keep
So as a
going.
result of that, they had to revise their timeline. The sheriff has now revised the time, made major changes to this timeline 3 times now. And it's not just because they decided to, it's because we forced their hand. We presented actual documentation showing that what they were saying was not true, verifiable information. And only after that did they say, okay, yes, we're revising it, but not because they did this. Like the sheriff specifically is talking about the independent journalists saying it's not because of them we're revising, but we are going to revise, and it turns out that what they said is actually exactly correct. So at this press conference on Friday, they barred us. They shut the doors and had a you know a, an armed cop standing there so we
That's too
couldn't get
bad.
in. They also canceled the Q&A session. So once the thing was over and they opened the doors, there were 4 of us there. We flooded in and started asking questions. Went to the police information, the public information officer, asking things that matter, like the security guard, Jesus Campos. We're asking, did you administer, as would be standard procedure, a gun residue test to see if maybe he had fired a gun? Is it possible that he is the one who shot Paddock? We don't know. So did you do a gun residue test? And you can see on the video them saying, we're not going to answer that. And they turn and leave, and they actually end up kicking us out after a few minutes. Those are important questions. So the mainstream media, some of them have actually come to us and said, hey, next time, why don't you ask this question? They know it themselves. I knock the mainstream
Oh,
media all
that's
the time. I
interesting.
love to do it, but
They're
they
good guys.
know.
They want
There are
this
some,
information. Yeah.
yeah, they can't ask it themselves without putting their own careers at risk. They were coming up to us afterwards saying, what about this? What do you think about this? Can you ask this? So they were upset that we were barred from this last press conference because we're the only ones that are getting the police and the FBI to come clean on some of this stuff.
Okay,
And
so how
Jesus Campos is gone now.
I know
No,
that's
we
so
can't find him.
interesting. So what, since things are starting to come together, can you give us a bullet item list of what is coming together? What is kind of like a clear snapshot that you think you have?
All right, here are some of the facts that we can say. On the night of the shooting, on the day of the shooting, they moved guns up to this room. Whether or not there was actually anything shot out of the 32nd floor, we cannot verify that yet. Early on, I assumed that they had at least some of the shooting happening there. But when you look at the crime scene photos, rifles expel brass casings. And there are only a handful of casings around the room. For someone to be up there, bah, 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 there would be hundreds of them all over, and that's not there. The blood pattern around Paddock's head is extremely confusing. It doesn't make sense. It's not consistent.
It's not
The type
consistent with.
with there are two patterns. There is one where there's the appearance of a pool of blood that has seeped into the carpet and is dry. Then within that, there is another pool of blood that is bright red and congealed, and you can see a couple of the shell casings are laying on top of it. There's no splatter on them. You can see that they were placed there after the blood had already dried some. So we're confused about that. So at this point, we can't say with certainty that there was actually any shooting happening from that room. I can say that we have ruled out a number of places as possible places where they shot from a forensic acoustic analysis. It didn't come from some of the places we were speculating. But the volume, the I'm sorry, the sheer number of people who have come forward saying, we were there, we saw it, we know there were multiple gunmen. That at this point is well established. They won't admit it yet, But that's going to come out. That will come. If
It
we keep
has to
on
at this
this,
point.
it has to.
Okay.
They're going to have to own up to that at some point. They'll say, oh, we just found out. They've known all along. They just won't talk about it. So we know that. We also know that. So that debunks the idea that Stephen Paddock was a lone gunman. That we can rule out. That's just not true. Some other things we can rule out would be theories that came out, like shooting from a drone or a helicopter. We visited some helicopter companies there, and just long story short, we can rule that out. As far as the big question at this point, Sarah, is still that why, and that's where the focus is. We need to look at the money. We're looking at money trails, trying to track it back. There are some questions there that we've got, and we're looking at the possibility of the very likely possibility that this was some kind of operation that went bad. Some of this just is botched. For example, they tried to blow, or at least tried to make it appear that they were going to blow these great big these two fuel tanks that have jet fuel, 43,000 barrel fuel tanks. I went and got up close and got pictures, and you can see where incendiary rounds struck them, actually penetrated the fuel tanks. You can see the burn marks. It's about this wide, the radius, huge, where it's burned on the outside. And the size of the bullet holes doesn't match up with any of the weapons that they say that they've located. So we're curious about that. Also, the fact that jet fuel is not highly flammable like gasoline would be. That's something that we're trying to track down is why would they do this? Because it's not like in the movies where you'd shoot it and boom, you'd have this great big explosion. The amount of oxygen that would be needed for it to combust and everything. It's almost like it's just a psychological tactic to scare people into thinking, what if this had happened?
Oh, I
Look, they
see.
tried to do this. So we're not sure. We're still looking at that. So a lot of loose ends. But we are on it. We've got a couple people there now, and if I can get back there, I'm going to try and get back as well.
Well, how about shooters behind the stage? Because I've heard that. Is that something that is starting to seem like it could be true?
It's possible. There are definitely shooters that are in the crowd, and you can hear that in some of the videos. FBI and the Sheriff's Department said that the gunfire started at 10:05 p.m. And that's at the point where the country singer starts up a new song. He just a couple seconds into it, and then you hear the ba 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 ba. But if you listen to the audio, some of the cell phone footage, you can clearly hear prior to that, in the minute before that, individual shots going off. Pop, pop, pop. And then after that, some people set off some fireworks with some firecrackers, which we believe was a signal. Because after that, that's when there's some kind of explosion. It sounds like a bomb. We don't know what it was yet, but it's a pretty good explosion. You see the people scatter. They go running away from this in the crowd where this whatever the device was could have been some kind of cherry bomb or something. I don't know. But the people run from it, and this is all happening just in the handful of seconds before the shooting started, about 30 seconds before the shooting started. So it was a coordinated attack. As but
Interesting.
where they whether it came from behind the stage or not, I can't say for certain. I know the FBI was looking at that because when I was there, they also had a crane that was taking some of the FBI agents up toward the top of the stage. They were searching around the top, around the back. So I observed them. They were walking, or they wear these little, like blue booties on their shoes because they're walking around the crime scene. They're working in groups of three or four, scouring, just going back and forth looking for any bullets. They wanted to get, they, you know, they completely sanitize the place before they let anyone else in.
Well, let's talk about YouTube, because YouTube could be being bullied too, right? And to a certain degree, they haven't shut people totally down there, allowing a lot to go through. Do you think they could be having an internal civil war as well, and maybe some people are in danger at YouTube?
I think that YouTube is fairly well united on being, it's more of a political ideology. They're predominantly liberal. There's a Hollywood producer who is a contact of mine. He produces a lot for YouTube, for their YouTube Red series, different shows that they do. And I've spoken with him, and he said that that YouTube, the employees, are very, very predominantly liberal in their political ideology. And so that plays out in the decisions they make. When someone flags a video for review, any user can watch a video and say, I think YouTube shouldn't allow this. And so they'll flag it. Well, if YouTube reviews it, the person sitting there making the judgment call on whether or not to get rid of that video or not, most of those people are left-leaning in their political philosophy. So when you have something that's promoting Second Amendment or conservative viewpoints or conspiracy theory, something that they don't like, they'll pull it. So this happened to me. My very first video that I did on the LA on the Las Vegas shooting went viral, and it got millions of views. And on Google, if you typed in Las Vegas shooting, there were only two search rankings above my channel. There was Time Magazine, and there was some group out in the UK. I was ahead of CNN, MSNBC, everything, and that infuriated them. Wall Street Journal did a story on me asking me all about that. How did you get ranked higher than CNN? Why is it that the American people were going to your videos instead of going to an authoritative source like CNN? I said, well, that's because CNN is not an authoritative source. They just present one very sanitized viewpoint, and they're not going to explore other questions. The American people are smarter than that. They want a broader view. They may not agree with my conclusions, but they at least want the opportunity to see the evidence. And so, because that was happening, the corporate media pressured YouTube because I was appearing ahead of them, and so they pulled my video down, deleted it, gave me a channel strike, a community standard strike. No explanation of what I said that violated any guidelines, and it was terrible. So I actually got interviewed by USA Today about that, and as a result of the bad publicity that YouTube got for this draconian censorship, they put my video back up. Now I'm still in still battling with them because I had actually earned, based on the millions of views that I had, they were all monetized. I earned somewhere between $8,000 to $14,000 in ad revenue. They won't pay me a penny.
Well, and
Even
that.
though they restored my video and admitted that they did wrong by removing it, they're not willing to pay what I had earned on that video.
Even though you did earn it, I mean, it wasn't, it
Right.
was documented as revenue. Because, with mine, I had a really popular video with Robert David Steele that was shut down. And they, demonetized, and I didn't get any of that. But, I've had a lot of videos demonet. They did a whole slew of demonetizing on me and
Yeah.
then added those back up. A lot of them back out. I still have some that are demonetized. But yeah, for me, I didn't get anything.
Well,
But
after
you
they,
actually even had the revenue already documented.
yeah, I've got screenshots of it. So not
Wow.
only that, but after they restored that video, they kind of kicked me in the teeth. What they did was they just demonetized everything on my channel. I've got over 800 videos that I've
Oh,
done over the
geez.
years that for years have been, they've been okay. But when they restored the one video, they also demonetized everything. So out of 800 videos, over 95%, I would estimate, are now demonetized. So my income is non-existent at this point from YouTube.
Well, hopefully
Not
people
only
can
that,
support you. Go ahead.
I was going to say on my way out to Las Vegas, on my drive out to the airport, I said, hey, tonight I'm going to be live streaming from Las Vegas talking about my investigation out there, so make sure you tune in. When my flight landed and I got to the strip to start live streaming, I found they had taken the video where I said, hey, I'm going to live stream. They gave me a community standard strike for that video, deleted it. They said it was harassment and cyberbullying. Which is strange because I didn't mention anybody in the video. I was saying, hey, I'm going to Las Vegas and I'm going to live
It
stream.
clearly wasn't.
And it also canceled my, it, when you get the community standard strike, it deletes your ability to live stream. Funny thing is, on my flight back, when I landed, they removed that community standard strike and they re-enabled my live stream ability. So it's just coincidental, totally coincidental that from the time I flew out to the time I flew back, just for that period of time, they took away my live streaming.
It's so
So
weird
they know what
because,
they're doing.
yeah, it's just so strange because I did a strike against mine too, and then all of a sudden that got removed. And I don't, it seems like there's just weird stuff going on. It seems like there is a little bit of internal debate
I
but I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I agree. I think that part of it is they know that they don't have good legal grounds to do what they're doing, because as video creators, we sign an electronic contract when we say that we're going to upload our videos. We agree to certain terms, and YouTube agrees. You know, it's a contract. It's a legally binding contract. And if you and I are producing videos that meet all of the guidelines, then they are contractually obligated to fulfill their end. But they changed it after the election. They tweaked it to where now they say it's not just that you have to abide by the actual stated, publicly posted guidelines, but now we reserve the right for any reason that we choose to demonetize you without any warning or notice.
And
And so that's how they get away with it
the
now.
sad part is they are a pseudo monopoly. I mean, they're a monopoly right now. So there isn't an alternative. From a free market standpoint, there is no alternative that even comes close to what they offer. So when you look at what a monopoly is, from all academic standpoints, they are a monopoly right now. So once you become a monopoly and you're a public utility like they are, now do they have different things that they have to, because, you know, people say, well, they're a company, they can do whatever they want. Okay, fine, I agree with that. But now they're not just a company. Now they're a monopoly. All academic standards on what a monopoly is applies to them. Nothing even comes close. And so now what happens? Because they are such an important aspect of how we run our society right now. Life has changed.
Well, you can say, for example, have a bottled water company, and you don't have to give that water away for free. It's your company. This is it. If you want my bottled water, you have to pay for it. And that's free market. However, if you take control of all of the water supply or the vast majority of it, and you tell the public, you cannot have water unless you pay us what we charge, and because we have no competition, we're going to charge you the highest rate we can. That is a monopoly.
Or
They have
even worse,
control.
if you have political ideals that are not what ours are, you don't get water.
You get no water. So the same thing is happening now. Google and YouTube is owned by Google. They control a resource, and that resource is information. YouTube is nothing more than a search engine. YouTube is basically just Google for videos. Okay, it brings up you type in what you want to know, and they present it to you. Here's this, this, and this. But because there are no other viable platforms other than YouTube, and because Google is by far the largest search engine out there, that they have gained a monopoly on the flow of information. So it's no longer saying, well, you're presenting this product or service, but we've got all these other great alternatives to choose from. No, they have taken control of the water supply, and now they're saying, we're not going to give this to you, or if you want this, you've got to do things our way. And that's a monopoly. And that's why at this point, because of the more people go to YouTube for news than they go to all of the major networks combined. So this is a critical thing for the public good. And if a private company can control something like that, or say they control, water, it's in the public interest to
Absolutely.
break up that monopoly or turn that resource into a public utility.
Where it stands against our Constitution. where the Constitution is upheld. There's been a lot of landmark cases. The Skokie, Illinois case. My dad's one of his great friends and then college roommate was the Jewish lawyer that represented the Nazis, Goldberger. Yeah. And my son got to do a report in high school on that whole thing. But there, he went through a lot. There's a lot of things in our history that people went through to protect our freedom of speech. And, people look at our history. Now, that was one of the first landmark cases when a Jewish person, he believed in the right of free speech. He had problems. He lost a lot of his family members, wouldn't talk to him. He had a lot of personal things, but he did it because he believed in the notion of free speech. Imagine a Jewish person representing a Nazi, right? It was blasphemy at the time, but it was a landmark case and it was so important. And so people went through that to protect our freedom of speech. And I mean, it's that important. I mean, this is really a historical thing that we're talking about here. And it's really about, it's just as big of a deal, if not bigger than that landmark case.
It's like it really is. I know this has become cliche to say it, but it is really like living in George Orwell's 1984. This is like the genesis of the big brother that controls everything, the thought police, double think, double speech. This is it. And if we don't act now while we have a fighting chance, if this becomes solidified and this becomes the future where information and the interpretation of what is truth is in the hands of a private corporation, a
We're
private
in trouble.
corporation where the people have very specific viewpoints, very globalist, very anti-nationalist. That is bad news for all of
Well,
us.
and it doesn't even matter what your viewpoints, whatever. Let's say YouTube is, even if they were just nationalists, they were just
Right, right.
that would be bad too. It's like the my father's friends, he's a Jewish and supporting the Nazi. Nobody liked his, I suppose the other Nazis liked it. Nobody liked that Nazi viewpoint. The point is, it doesn't matter what viewpoint you have. It's just having one viewpoint is bad. You have to allow that, because that discussion, because one viewpoint will eventually go into some kind of bad, all historical account shows that when you just force one viewpoint, it kind of goes into the wrong direction. Right, you need
And
that diversity.
a lot of truth that we gain is because of collaboration with alternate, if you
Exactly.
function in an echo chamber where you're preaching to the choir, you only say things, and your audience is just people who already agree with you, you're never really going to have your ideas challenged. You don't find out, is there a flaw? I love talking with people that I don't agree with. That's how I feel like I
Exactly.
gain my most knowledge, is because they point out, they're willing to say, Jake, you're wrong, and here's why I think you're wrong, and they spell it out, and I realize, you're right.
Well, if you
I've
don't
got
have an
that
ego
wrong.
problem, I've had David Williams on. He says, there's never, he goes, I've never lost a debate. He goes, because even if I'm wrong, I learned something.
Right.
That I'm like,
I
oh, I gotta quote that. That's
oh,
awesome.
yeah. I get viewers lately who criticize me because I talk with I collaborate some with other people like Jason Goodman, Laura Loomer, and they say, "Oh, you can't trust them. Why are you even? You shouldn't even talk to them." Like, you know what? I don't have to agree with all of their viewpoints
Exactly.
and all of their interpretations to have a mutually beneficial. I mean, we worked a lot together in Las Vegas, and it was the combination of our efforts, our different ways of thinking, our different skill sets that produced something greater than we would have gotten individually on our own. So I'm completely willing to talk to other people, even if, we don't agree on the majority of
Well,
our
there's no,
points.
and some of the people I have on, I mean, there's no way, I'm trying to get people that are changing the world and doing major disruption and innovation and big, there's no way I agree with everybody that comes on my show. There's some of them are just way out there. But I'm presenting it and bringing it to people so they can learn from it and get new ideas and paradigm changes and things. It's so important that we are presented with ideas that we might not agree with, because the only way that you can confirm your own ideas have any validity is to look at something that's completely opposite and see if it holds water. Yeah. So, okay, I'm off my soapbox, but how can people support you? Because I
I
know it's
agree with you
really,
completely.
I I know that people that you really need, and I need my support too, but you really lost a lot of your income. You have a family to support. You have all these things. How can people support you, learn more about you, and just tell everybody how they can do that?
The best way to find my work is on, for right now, it's on YouTube, and that's youtube.com/prepare333. So that's prepare333. On Twitter, it's twitter.com/morphonios. And as far as income, yes, this was and will continue to be my primary income through my research and investigative work. Since I no longer get it from YouTube, I do need to rely more on public support. So if someone wants to be a patron of this kind of work, if you want to provide funding for the kind of work that I do, you can go to patreon.com/endtimesnewsreport or paypal.me/endtimesnewsreport.
Thank you so much for joining the show. I really, really appreciate it. I think our listeners got a lot. Hopefully, I don't know how they couldn't get a lot out of this interview.
It was really nice. I really enjoyed talking with you, Sarah.
Oh, good. Okay. Hold on.